I'm Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Today, we're at the High Commission of Tanzania in Arcadia, Pretoria, and we are joined by the High Commissioner, Ms. Radia Umsuya. The High Commission for the United Republic of Tanzania is based in South Africa, but it is also accredited to the Kingdom of Lesotho, the Republic of Botswana, and the Republic of Namibia. That's an enormous portfolio. Welcome to the show, High Commissioner.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Please, can you tell us briefly about the role of the High Commission of the United Republic of Tanzania in South Africa?
Yes, as I said, my name is Radia Umsuya, the High Commission of the United Republic of Tanzania to South Africa, Lesotho, Botswana, Namibia, but I also cover SADC matters as well. The role of a High Commission, or an embassy for that matter, in other situations, is to promote relation between countries. That's the most important thing, to promote relation between countries so as to achieve peace, stability, and cooperation, to dispel uncertainty or mistrust among nations.
And increasingly with the SADC and our 15 member states of SADC, that is fostering a greater unity amongst the Southern African region.
Correct.
And because this is a gender show, a Womanity, Woman in Unity, it's a program about celebrating women's achievements and their hard work. And I see in your capacity, you are your country's representative, which has very, very significant repercussions, and the importance of women holding positions in government as heads of state. In effect, you're a role model, not just for your government, but for women in the country and in the continent. And if I look to South Africa, for instance, in the last 20 years, we're still a relatively young democracy, but there has been great progress made in terms of the representation of women in parliament and government. For instance, pre-1994, before the first democratic election, the representation of women in government parliament was less than 3%. In the 1994 election, that grew to 27%. In 1999, 30%. In 2004, it had reached 33%. And in 2009, 45%. This has implications, I see it, not just as women representatives within the parliament of their country and as role models, but also in terms of the policy making that comes into play for women across the country. And I noticed that according to the Inter-Parliamentary Union and an article that I read by your Minister of Community and Development, Gender and Children, Ms. Sophia Simba, that the representation of women in Tanzania has grown from 15% in 2005 to sitting at 36% in 2013. What are your perspectives?
I think increasingly everybody individually are coming to appreciate that all of us bear the weight of this world, and therefore everybody should contribute, and everybody does contribute, but we should recognize the contribution of half of the world, which is women. So I think increasingly people appreciate the role that women play and make it official now, because as much as women are appreciated, but to bring it to the level of decision-making, to bring it to the level of policy-making, to bring it to the level of implementation, we need to do more, and more is being done because people appreciate the role of women. They see their mothers, and now they come to realize that we can also play, or women can play a role in these spheres of government.
So people are seeing their mothers attaining these positions and looking to them as role models and getting a better appreciation of the capabilities of women. Would you say that's right?
Yes, that's correct.
And I think that you give a perfect example in terms of your scenario and how you have represented the country. I'd imagine with the work that you do, you are exposed to numerous other ambassadors and high commissioners in the various circles that you move in. How would you say that you've seen things change from a gender point of view and gender ratios from when you started off as a young woman, as a student, and growing up and from where we were before to where we are today?
I will say, first of all, I have a personal experience. When I first joined the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in 2082, there were 22 new recruits, new officers. Among the 22, 18 were girls. We were girls then.
18?
And everybody...
18 out of 22?
Out of 22.
Just the majority.
And everybody in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs was taken aback and saying, yes, we did request this position to be filled, but we didn't know this is how it's going to be filled. How are we going to deal with this influx? Influx, and I'm saying influx advisedly, because that's what they thought had happened to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs then. And I'm told then in one of the management meeting, and it was raised that, you see, we have all this young officers, most of them are girls. How are we going to work with them? And one of the directors then, I remember her very well, Dora Mbezi, who said, what do you mean what you're going to do with them? They're here, we're going to work with them. And here we are. So that was a game changer in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs when I was recruited then. And since then, they came to recognize that they could have female officers and they would be just as good as any officer, and if anything, they could just as bad as the next one. So I think we've seen a lot of changes, and of them that have joined the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, I would say about 6 or 8 now are ambassadors as well.
That's a great achievement.
It is a great achievement, and they are the ambassadors of head of departments. So we've come a long way, but I'm glad that it has happened because they realize that we work just as well. And as I said earlier, the plane is also changing in the continent, in the world. Because even though Africa is seen as a continent or a place where women are more disadvantaged than other parts of the world, but it's not true. It's not true. We all have challenges in many parts of the world. It's just that Africa, because Africa is not as developed economically, so women suffer more.
Yes, to a certain extent, there is a feminization of poverty.
Hi, I'm Yvonne Chaka Chaka, the United Nations Goodwill Ambassador on Malaria in Africa. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program against racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kilohertz on the 31-meter band. Today we're talking to the High Commissioner of the United Republic of Tanzania to South Africa, Ms. Radia Msuya. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. Now, picking up on our conversation with the High Commissioner of the United Republic of Tanzania to South Africa, Ms. Radia Msuya.
I kept one instance that I will not forget. I was in our High Commission in London, and I went to the airport to meet a colleague from headquarters. He was an officer and I was an officer. I met him at the airport and we got into a taxi, the black cabs in London. And this taxi driver says, he went on to address the my colleague who supposedly was my husband.
So it was an automatic assumption.
Automatic assumption. And said, oh, so you travel with your wife. Africa's a great place because, you know, in the UK, a woman's place is in the kitchen, bare feet, pregnant, and nursing a toddler. And he said that straight in my face, not knowing that I was an officer. And he was not my husband. But assuming that this is the woman's position. And I was shocked because this is the United Kingdom. And this is an English man.
And I think that is a wonderful point that you've raised when we say that these are so-called developed nations with a so-called developed mindset, and yet this ingrained patriarchy.
Mm-hmm. So this is the world that we live in. But I'm happy that increasingly people seem to realize that women are indeed playing a major role, and if they're not impeded, because I don't really like the word empowerment. I really like to say that they're obstacles. Women don't need to be empowered, but we need to remove obstacles that demonstrate their contribution, that allow them to contribute in all levels of walks of life. They're obstacles, because in a household, for instance, who empowers a mother to look after their children? Who empowers a woman to fight for their children? Who empowers a woman to look for means of sustenance for the children? It's because they are obstacles. And let's deal with these obstacles that are structural, cultural, and mindset.
So women have a great capacity for solution solving and providing. If we could go back to your career, you've mentioned that you started, you joined the ministry, was it in 1982?
Yes, correct.
Can you take us through your steps, through your career?
My father was a civil servant, a basic civil servant, worked for the colonial government and then for the independent government. So we lived in many parts of Tanzania. And sometimes when you talk about civil servants, when I talk about my father being a civil servant, people would think like we lived a privileged life. We lived a basic life, really, because this was a basic civil servant with a basic salary.
Did you have benefits such as education for children? Did that come through with the
position? No. In Tanzania, after independence, education was free. So anybody could go to school.
So
even
important.
Though probably if that wasn't the case, then maybe my father could have afforded an ordinary school, not these prestigious schools and stuff. I just went to regular government schools, and there were private schools, of course, but we never went to any private schools. We went to basic schools, and we were fortunate that Tanzania provided free education. At that time the population was much smaller, so the government could support us. The government can't do that now.
What, about 50 million?
Yes. No. Then when I was going to school, we were about 12 million.
Wow, that is an incredible explosion.
Yeah, when I started school, we used to think that the population of Tanzania is 12 million. So I would say the structure at that time, the policies at that time, allowed for all of us to go to school. And fortunate that my parents were schooled, so they encouraged us to stay in school. Because going to school is not always staying in school. So to stay in school. And fortunately, all of us had good education.
And you must have grown up in a highly feminized environment. Six girls.
Yeah. And I had a very, very, very strong mother and strong grandmother. That they were the one who ran the show. My father would always laugh it off and say, okay, if your mother says you should do this, please go ahead and do it.
So they were the matriarchs.
Yes. So at least they were very firm women. For some reason, they were just happened to be strong women, that they were not intimidated by men, even though they lived in an environment that was really intimidating, and they didn't have that education. They were not schooled the way I was schooled. But they were strong women to tell us that stay in school.
And do you feel that they instilled those same values in you and your sisters?
Oh, a lot, particularly my grandmother. She was a no-nonsense woman. She would say that you wake up in the morning, you do things that you need to do, and you stay in school. And she would say, I don't understand the relationship between boys and girls. There should be no interaction in terms of, not that we should not talk to them, but to protect us from any misconduct. So I would say they were a very strong influence on us. I would say I just happened to have a strong woman as a grandmother, and probably she influenced her daughters I would say I lived at an exciting time when there was a lot on women and gender. That was shortly before the 1985 United Nations Conference on Women. So everybody was excited about the participation of women. So I would say I got into government at the right time. And there were always double standards judging women and men, but they were subtle because the topic of the day was women advancement. So I would say, despite those obstacles, people were realizing that we have women can play a role, and therefore I went through the normal processes a young Foreign Service officer would go through. We were exposed to all the training and all the practical activities that we did. Of course, there was always the thing that you're going to be pregnant, you're going to have children, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. It happened when we were there. All of us had got married, had children. All of us would join the Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
But
and it wasn't an obstacle.
That's what I wanted to ask. Mm. If maternity, if having children was seen as an obstacle and almost detrimental to your career path?
It was seen as an obstacle. But in actual fact, our laws in Tanzania, fortunately, provided for support for pregnant women, support for nursing women. So we'd get 3 months maternity leave. So you have at least 3 months to look after your baby, where you stay at home. And then you have 3 months after the maternity leave to be able to go back and take care of your child. So you'd work like 3/4 of the day, you wouldn't do the whole day. 3/4 of the day, and you can go back and take care of your children. So the system was quite supportive.
Very
intense in terms of the rules and the regulation. But sometimes your boss would look at you in a manner like, choose, would you want family or would you want a job? So the attitude was still there. But because the rules and regulations protected us, it was easy to be able to raise families and to be able to be Foreign Service officers and subsequently ambassadors. But they're always obstacles, and I call them obstacles because there are rules and regulations that allow you to do all those things, but still you will find some subtle obstacles as to how would you do that, how would you balance that. They would always remind us as to how we're going to balance those things, but we've pulled through.
It reminds me of for instance, when I give lectures to master's students, how you have the theoretical aspect, so that is the rules, that is what we're entitled to, but then you have the practical application, and that is what happens in the real world environment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I would say that the contribution that women make is important, because despite all these obstacles, when we sit with them, they seem to appreciate what you do, what you say. Sometimes they would consult you and say, you know, if we'd ask her, she might have a solution to this obstacle or a solution to this problem. So that makes me feel good that they are appreciating the role of women, even though we still, you know, as diplomats, you're expected to mingle, to go to these receptions, to go to places and stuff. And there's always, you know, the queer look that, like, if I walk into a hotel and sit at a bar, people would start wondering, what is she coming to do here? But if my male colleague walks into a bar, sits there, order a drink, nobody would wonder, why is he there? But we still face that
the issue of double standards.
Yeah, we still face that. I travel with my husband, for instance, and we show our passport there. And they would be addressing him, thinking that he's the diplomat. You understand? So we still have that a lot.
And a question to you on that. How do you address that? So when someone comes up, you're going through passport control, you presented your passports, and you have this assumption that because there's a man, and he happens to be your husband, that he is the diplomat. How do you respond?
No, you take it in stride, because they're not doing it maliciously. It's just because that's the way they're used things to be done. So I never get upset. If I need to explain, I will. If there's no need for explanation, I'll just, you know, sit there and do whatever needs to be done. So I really take this, the gender issue, the race issue, because I know there are situations where people, for instance, if a black woman, I walk into a business class lounge and so I said, are you traveling business? As if I can't read, because it's written there, this is where business class passengers would go. But they say, are you traveling business? And I would just say, yes, I'm traveling business. I wouldn't say, why do you think I don't travel business? Because they're not doing it because they have anything personal against you. It's because that's the way things have been done. And that's the way. So you don't need to be upset. Just explain to them that, yes, I'm the diplomat and that's my husband. Yes, I'm traveling business or I'm traveling first class. Yes, I'm Radhia, the one that you expect. Because sometimes you go somewhere and then people say, we're expecting the High Commission of Tanzania. I said, that's me. It's like, oh, no, we're expecting a man or something different. I said, that's me. And I know that's the way they feel, but, you know, it's not their fault. So I don't mind, really.
It's breaking through preconceived mental modes and undoing stereotypes. And the reality is that those frameworks exist for people.
Mm-hmm. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, my name is Yvonne Chaka-Chaka, an ambassador for the Nelson Mandela Children's Hospital. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program against racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence. Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka every week on this day at this time.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band. Today we're talking to the High Commissioner of the United Republic of Tanzania to South Africa, Ms. Radhia Msuya. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk.
We've been talking about gender, and you've demonstrated how you've had these personal interactions where people have expectations, thinking that they're going to be meeting a man, but they're meeting a woman, or they think that, for instance, as you mentioned, your male colleague was an officer, you are an officer. So there's these assumptions that women aren't on the level that we want women to be at. So gender has become a global focus, and recently South Africa has established their Women Empowerment and Gender Equality Bill, which is currently sitting in the House of Parliament. But ultimately, the purpose of this bill is to create greater equality and parity amongst women so that we get to a point where there is 50-50 representation of women in decision-making positions and positions of power. In your opinion, how do you think legislation like this will improve the space for women?
I think legislation is very, very important. It's very, very important, because that sets the rules, that sets the practice. And increasingly in this world, we always want to refer to something. So legislation is very, very, very important. It's paramount. Because the next stage will be the implementation, the translation, the exception of the legislation. But if it's not there, for instance, if we didn't have 3 months maternity leave in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs or in the government of Tanzania, how would I convince my superior that I need to take care of the future citizen of the same country that we're trying to build? There I'm taking up two responsibilities. I'm an officer, I work for this ministry. I'm a mother nurturing another citizen of this country, of whom we need
a future generation.
Yes. So I think legislation is very important, because then it sets the rules, it sets the condition, and it protects those who need to use it. But it's not enough. We need to promote those regulations. We need to review them, because sometimes they would include things that are not practical. So they should be living documents or living texts that are reviewed to take into account new situations. So implementation is important. Review, sensitization is also very important, to sensitize people the importance of implementing those legislation, because they are good for everyone. They're not only good for women, they're good for everyone.
Yes, that mainstreaming aspect, and as you'd mentioned, in terms of supporting the future generations that are coming through. I had a great conversation with people from SADC, and we were talking about the gender protocol, which has been adopted by several member states. I think there's only two countries which are waiting to come through for inclusion, one of them being the DRC. And again, with legislation like this, they've mentioned that it was an evolving document. It was organic. Are you working with the gender protocol as well in Tanzania? Do you have similar legislation?
Yes, we do have similar legislation, and those are among the protocols or subjects of SADC that I need to follow up. And as I was telling you, a piece of legislation is very important, but its implementation. The legislation would say women representation should be at least 30%. The implementation would say, I mean, in practice you would see, they say you are entitled to 30%. Not at least. The at least would not be mentioned. So you'll find that they only work towards 30%.
So it's subject to interpretation.
Indeed. Indeed. And I've seen that in many occasions in our country and in our neighboring country, where sometimes there are 9 seats and they say 3 are for women. No. It says a minimum of 3. It could be 9 positions, all of them could be occupied by women. But it says at least 3. That's why I want this legislation, because it says at least 30%.
And that is a big hurdle, implementation. Have you got any propositions or examples that you've experienced where implementation has been as effective as the legislation?
There are some situations that you find them, and there are some situations that they're not as pronounced. Because the most important thing is, for instance, in most of this position, is qualification. Do you qualify for that position? So you want people who qualify, or women who qualify for that position, not because just because they're women.
Absolutely. No one wants tokenism either.
Indeed. So you need to strike a balance between the qualifications that are required and the gender balance that you're looking for. So in the implementation, that's why I say you need to review this all the time, because sometimes they are being abused by saying that you said you wanted women in this position, here are the women, and if they don't perform, then they become the yardstick of what should have been done. You say, see, we appointed all this and nothing is coming out of it. But it could be the same with men. You could appoint men who could not deliver, and you have an opportunity to review that, to recall that person, to change them, to do whatever you can. So it's tricky in terms that the implementation has many facets, in terms of the numbers, in terms of the qualities, and in terms of the regular checks and balances. We need to go through all these three processes.
And interesting that you mentioned that. I had a discussion with a South African woman in construction the other day, and they were talking about the fact that if we have a 30% or if we have a 50% mandate of women being involved in this particular area of business, that what was happening was people were taking in entry-level positions, so they were providing the flowers, they were providing the catering services. And she said, this is absolutely not what we want. We don't want to have women coming in, occupying these minimum levels, not getting the core experience of why they're here in the first place, for you to fulfill a quota of 30% in peripheral services, peripheral functions that are not related to the industry. And I think that is also part of the issue of implementation.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And moving on to Tanzania specifically, how do you see women's progress and development over the years that you've encountered with your career going through?
There's enormous potential. Women or the country is on the move. We've made a lot of progress since I joined the University of Dar es Salaam as a in a preferential arrangement, where they say that even in the universe of Dar es Salaam, when we joined, we were called the floods.
Because there were
a lot of girls. It was like we flooded the university. And the whole of residence, that half of it used to be occupied by male students, the male students had to be removed because the whole structure was occupied by girls.
What was the catalyst?
The catalyst was that at the time, Tanzania was going through socialism. And students were required to work for 2 years after they matriculated high school. That was the regulation or the policy, that after high school, everybody would work for 2 years to contribute to the country. But then immediately after that decision, it was decided that this might not work for girls. If they finish high school and they're made to work for 2 years, they might find themselves in family ways and they will not be able to continue with university. So a resolution was passed within the government and the party at that time, because we had only one party, and it's called Musoma Resolution, to allow girls to go directly to university from high school so that they don't... So this is why I say the obstacles, remove the obstacles and they will succeed. So as I entered university, we were called the floods, Mafuriko, because there were so many girls at the same time for the first time.
That's a wonderful expression.
And after graduating from university, I joined the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and it was the same thing. And increasingly, we are having more women in government, more women in parliament, more women now. There's an effort to bring in more women in local government, because that's where basic decisions are being made. If we don't have enough women in local government, in local municipalities, and wait for all the decisions to be taken at that level, the higher level of government. So the effort now is to bring up women in local government. But it's not without obstacles. It's not without challenges. There are still challenges in Tanzania. But the fact that 30 years now that I've been in government, I've seen this progress, I'm optimistic. And I think now, apart from bringing up women in the local government, those of us who've served for this long, we should try to mentor young girls, to tell them that it is possible. They should be focused, because as you say, in the digital world, there are a lot of distractions now. Everybody is distracted to deal with other than focusing on their progress and what that means to themselves and to their families.
And you have an abundance of knowledge to pass on to the next generation.
Indeed. So I think that is our responsibility now, that we have legislation in place, we have policies in place. It seems we have political will to bring women. Now we need to make sure that we use these opportunities to meet the challenges. Because as I said earlier, Africa is still plagued by poverty. And poverty manifests itself as a female person, in a female person. So we need to help these young girls to overcome the obstacles that they encounter despite the conducive environment. There are challenges. There's poverty. There's so many challenges that we need to nurture these young girls, to mentor these young girls so that they come through and take over what we've done, whatever that we've done to contribute to the development of our country. I don't know how strong we're going to be with our children, because I think there's a tendency of being diluted with this new environment, the digital world, that your children could tell you what should be done instead of your parents telling their children to be done. But we're also living in a situation whereby we find there's parental abuse. So where do we strike a balance between a parent being strict for their children to grow up properly and a situation where parents abuse their children, that we see more now?
I think part of the challenge now is that because the media is so readily available, so readily accessible, and we as consumers, and I use the term prosumers, are able to create our own media and put those communications out. Possibly it may be a higher incidence of reporting.
There's not a lot of peer pressure. When your children will come and tell you what their peers and their friends are allowed to do, they're allowed to have, and now there's a lot of cash going on. You give me credit for only 20 rand. My friend gets 100 rand. I say, just move to your friend's house and stay there and get 100 rand, and you'll call me when you're ready to come back home. You see, so we're going through a very difficult raising children, you see. It's also a challenge.
I think also part of the challenge is that we're a global village. In the past, we were isolated. We had our communities. We had a lot of structure. There was a very collective society. And people were very involved. Now we're starting to see a more individualistic society. But at the same time, by having this global village of connectivity, where youth have got access to more information, and they're trying to import those cultures into our environment.
But there are also advantages to some extent, you know. Sometimes I think the advantages, for instance, there are things like, for instance, now we have the problem with HIV/AIDS. We never used to, when I grew up, I didn't know about condoms, about safe sex, about. But now they have that information. So there's some advantage. They have information that we never used to have, and it's good that information is available to them.
I take comfort in the fact that we are continually learning, and that life is changing, the world is changing, and that's the continuum that we live in. Things will never be the same as they were in the past.
Yeah, and whenever there are a lot of advantages. It's just that we want to be careful about the negative aspects of the new life that we live in. My grandmother had 5 children. 4 were girls. And the most important thing at that time for these girls to be properly married. And she succeeded doing that. And her daughters and 1 son had many girls as well. And the most important thing at this level now was education. So I don't know what is important for our children now.
Knowledge. And I think that with that knowledge there comes responsibility on how you use that knowledge.
Indeed. You're right. Knowledge now is the next frontier.
We'll be right back after this.
Hi, my name is Yvonne Chaka-Chaka, and I'm UNICEF and Rollback Malaria Goodwill Ambassador. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in the struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy. A program against social ills such as racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence. Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Balka every week on this day at this time.
Today we're talking to the High Commissioner of the United Republic of Tanzania to South Africa, Ms. Radia Msuya.
High Commissioner, thank you very much for sharing your story, your personal journey, and for your perspective on the progress and development of women in Africa and specifically in Tanzania. If I could ask, in closing our discussion today, what words of wisdom would you pass on to women who are listening to our show on the continent?
Anything they want and everything they want is possible. It can be done. It can be done with determination and focus. You can be anything you want in this world. And it is important that women play a critical role, because they are part of this important structure that we're trying to build. We're trying to build a better life for the future. So they have a role to play. They don't have an option. And because we have a role to play as women, then we can do what we want. It's possible to achieve our goals.
Thank you very much. You have been listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band. And we've been talking to Her Excellency, the High Commissioner Msuya, from the High Commission of the United Republic of Tanzania.